So imagine my excitement when Archdeacon Dell said, there's going to be a series of spiritual reflections given throughout Synod to help shape the discussion, to offer different perspectives. They will be roughly 5 minutes in length, and we'd like you to do reconciliation. So here's my 5 minutes on reconciliation. I start by telling two very brief stories that highlight some of the most important things for me personally that I've ever encountered in terms of what reconciliation is and can be. And the first goes back to about 1999, when a friend of mine from high school was engaged in overseas work with an NGO, and I had no idea what she was doing. She just said, hey, I'm going to Africa. And I said, okay, have fun. Drink safe water. And she came back, and she was a completely different person as you know, after being away for 7 months. And when we sat down and had a coffee, and I said, what was that like? Where were you? And she said, oh, I was in Rwanda. And I said, oh, okay. What were you doing in Rwanda? Cynically expecting some kind of explanation of you know, building some houses, painting some fences, you know, helping plant some fields, do, you know, all important work. But she said, oh, I was involved in reconciliation circles. I said, oh, I'm not familiar with that. What is that? She said, oh, it was really an intense task. I think that's how she described it, an intense task. I said, okay, what was it? And she said, well, it was members of the Hutu ethnic group coming together with members of the Tutsi Hutu group, except they were paired in terms of who had been aggressors and who had been victims and survivors of the genocide. And reconciliation circles looked like this. After a few months of preparation, of counseling on either side, and a series of meetings took place. And in those meetings, one person would come and sit down across from someone else at a table in front of other people and say, on this date, I took a machete and I killed your husband and I burned your house and I damaged your children forever and then I raped you. And I have absolutely nothing that's going to make that right. But I am more sorry than I can tell you for engaging in that behavior and the way that it has hurt you. And I recognize, and this is where the scripted part came in, I recognize, they both had to say, I recognize that us speaking truth to each other is the only way that we will be able to live in this place together. I went, whoa, what else did you do? Because I got a summer job. The second instance was actually just very recent for me, having had the distinct privilege of being one of the non-Indigenous people invited to the oft-cited road to Warm Springs in Pinawa, Manitoba, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and being able to not only engage in this beautiful room full of people who are all striving from many different perspectives in different places, striving for reconciliation and figuring out how that looks and how that feels and what the challenges are. And hearing Reverend Dr. Martin Brokenleg speak about, and he said, I'm speaking to the non-Indigenous folks in the room. He said, because I need you to understand some of the key differences, the things that actually make us different within our cultures. He said, non-Indigenous folks, tell me who your family are. He said, no, don't. What you're probably going to say is, well, you know, I've got a wife, and I've got, you know, two brothers, and you know, my wife and I have some kids, and I've got a mom, but you know, my dad's dead, and that's my family. And he went on to say as a counterpoint, you know, the majority of Indigenous cultures, when you talk about family, he said the thing for me growing up within my traditional culture and society, he said, I was probably six or seven before I could definitively tell you who my mom was. Because I was wet nursed by a great number of people, and every woman who was that age who was around me was my mom. And every man who was around me at that age was my dad, and therefore, you know, I have a million cousins, and I have, you know, brothers and sisters and relations of all kinds. I'm not disconnected from anybody in my community. And he said on average, if you look at it anthropologically, I can't say that, through the eyes of anthropology, you find that many indigenous people, when you talk about family, immediately come up with a list of upwards of 250 people. And it occurred to me that one of the important things that we need to talk about and understand is a different kind of kinship, a different kind of relating to each other. And so understanding that relationship, as it's laid out over and over and over again through tales of forgiveness in the Bible and Jesus' ministry, we find that the heart of relationship is actually love. And moving back from that, though, I want to say that one of the barriers to that lies in what I understand to be the opposite of love. We usually say love and hate, you know, kind of like salt, pepper, they go together, black, white. But hate is not the opposite of love. Apathy is the opposite of love. Love is a passionate caring for, a desiring of closeness in relationship and admiration. Apathy goes, meh. And so I'm trying to keep all of those things in my mind, and personally, that means that I've had to come face to face with some pretty hard truths that live inside me. In being invited to go to Pinawa, I thought, well, you know, it's a couple of years back, we rang some bells here, and that kind of spread, and, you know, I guess I'll maybe talk about bells, or maybe we're going to talk about what an indigenous church looks like and self-determination, not really fully understanding what that was, but I'm sure we'll have some kind of a council, we'll have a vote. And we'll all go home having voted and see how it goes. Which completely showed that I'm used to being privileged. And it immediately brought into my own view and my own understanding of myself the realization that within a question of self-determination within this church for Indigenous people, I don't have a vote. And for me to assume that I have a say one way or the other in terms of how people worship, how they engage with their culture and with God and with each other, for me to even assume that I have anything to add to that in terms of a yay or a nay, pointed out that I have a lot of work to do in terms of my own approaches to reconciliation. Reconciliation isn't something that I can allow. But reconciliation is something that I can continually find ways to get out of the way of. Reconciliation is valuing relationship and others' well-being over my own privilege. And that is hard. Reconciliation is recognizing the flaws of the past and present, but refusing to be apathetic about them. It's recognizing my own attitudes of, at times, superiority, ongoing paternalism, and not being apathetic about them. It's recognizing the spiritual crises that affect many in our midst who happen to come from an Indigenous background. Suicide rates that are off the charts. Not unsafe drinking water. Poor conditions to live in. There is a litany of things that each one of us knows that is wrong. And I will confess before you that a lot of the time I go, which is once again that apathy, that opposite of love in me, rearing up and calling my attention from what is the most important task. It's a spiritual crisis that affects everyone. We can't look at that and say, well, that's a spiritual crisis of the Indigenous community. In some ways it is. But my friends, the spiritual crisis for the non-Indigenous church is that we accept it as the norm. And so reconciliation is putting an end to apathy, especially in the places where people's lives are at risk, where their well-being is less than anything that we would settle for as non-Indigenous folks. Reconciliation is continually bringing ourselves to the task of saying love is greater than apathy, and that love is what will lead us into relationship. How long is that going to go on? Well, I don't know about you, but I have a whole internal laundry list of areas where this will continue to play out. It is not a short list in me. It may be in you, but it is not in me. So I will say that for me, as long as those things are going on, we keep up with it. As long as there is hurt, we still need to listen and be present in that. Wherever we find that love is falling down, not just in the culture around us, but where the church bumps up against that, where the church has been responsible for that, where the church, in some cases, is non-responsive, that is where we need to dig out the apathy and say, no longer do you have power over me. And in the name of Jesus, I commit myself this day and every day to love. Love that, when we are striving towards it, calls out the worst in us, brings it to light, and then by the power of God's healing, allows it to be turned into an opportunity for goodness to happen. Thank you.